a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's the Paul Gallant Show.
Pauly G Show, he's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
You know, I respect the whole organization of the Houston Texans. I respect the McNair family. I respect everyone that was there that drafted me in 2017. There's been great memories, fun memories.
Well, that's a load of crap. Hi, everybody. It's the Paul Gallant Show, the most interactive sports talk show in Houston, as you heard Mr. Voice Guy say. 713-780-3776 to call in or text in on the HRNP listener line on this Friday. Friday. Got to get down on Friday, December 2nd. Sean! How you doing, buddy? If you can't see on the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/ESPN975, in the bottom right corner, you have our producer cam. And Sean Mapes has probably the most hilarious set of headphones I've ever seen. And I think that it's difficult for him to actually hear me because he's holding up one ear to the right side like he is holding a 1920s telephone while the left side of his headphones dangle towards the floor. Sean, hi.
I can't hear you. Update, these don't work.
Oh no, that's
believe
a disaster.
Believe it or not, the headphones that are facing the opposite way, or one ear is facing the opposite way.
Yeah,
it's working.
It's a look. It's definitely a vibe.
I'm going to wear it just because it makes me feel more comfortable, but I'm not hearing anything when you're talking.
Okay, so I can just say a lot of mean things right now.
Well, when
principle.
I have my microphone on.
Oh.
So if we're having conversation, you can just talk over me, and I don't know what you're saying.
Oh, that's amazing. Probably not good to let me know that. It is, what, less than 2 days? No, slightly over 2 days until our prostate exam of a Sunday football game where Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans will do battle. Deshaun Watson saying all of those things at his press conference yesterday. That's really the most that you got out of simple Deshaun. I guess credit to the Browns, who gave him an extra day of preparation so he knew to not answer any of the many questions that he could potentially face. Like this question that he got. Hey, what do you think about the suite of accusers, 10 of them, that are going to be at NRG Stadium on Sunday?
Like I said, I'm focusing on just being the starting quarterback and executing the game plan. That's my main focus. I'm not worried about the atmosphere. I got to go in and make sure I execute the game plan.
I wanted him to push forward and stand on his innocence, but okay, fine. He's not going to give us that. He was also asked about the treatment and therapy he's getting on the side. More Deshaun Watson yesterday.
Sean, part of your agreement with the league was to undergo counseling and therapy while you were away. What did you learn about yourself during that time, and how do you apply that to now and going forward?
I respect your question, I understand, but that's more in that phase of clinical and legal stuff, and I've been advised to stay away from that and keep that personal.
Clinical and legal stuff. Yeah. So he doesn't have to answer any of those questions. What were we really expecting? I did want it to be a little bit more of a disaster like in August. I figured the Browns didn't trust him at all. Okay, maybe they trust him a little bit with that $230 million of guaranteed money they gave him. But Sunday's going to suck, right? It's just going to be terrible. Derek Stingley has a hamstring injury. He's not even going to be there. So you can't even think to yourself, well, what if Derek Stingley gets an interception of Watson? The future taking out the past. Like that. That's not going to happen. So, I mean, what do you want as far as us talking about this game? How about this? You know, on a day where we're still laughing at what you saw on Twitter last night, not only did Kanye West go on an Alex Jones show and make Alex Jones step back aghast by saying, and I quote, "I like Hitler," but also Kanye West in the middle of the night last night, I mean, the guy keeps on providing content, even if he is a crazy and possibly anti-Semitic person, where he put out a picture that looked like it was a yearbook photo of Chris Paul and essentially said that Kim Kardashian and Chris Paul had a little thing going. So, I mean, that's fun. And speaking of just out of left field stuff, how about an out of left field Deshaun Watson take, Sean? Do you feel like that might be a better way to go about it? How about like the ultimate zag when it comes to Deshaun Watson before Sunday's game?
I think that's what the city needs to heal, you know, to get all sides of this issue.
Okay. Well, here is LeVar Arrington, who you might remember from the Washington Commanders, playing football at Penn State, the Under Armour commercials. We must protect this house! Ooh. Here is LeVar Arrington with quite the zag on Deshaun Watson.
This, to me, makes Deshaun Watson, and I never would think that I would say this, it makes him a sympathetic figure.
Really?
Whoever goes to that game, they're going to that game to watch the game that Deshaun Watson is playing in a suite.
Can we pause?
Why
for a
would
second?
You even make?
So you heard him say in a suite. Arrington thinks it's weird that the accusers are going to the game in a suite, and he focuses on the suite part of it as this take continues. I'm going to agree with him from this perspective. It is strange to say that this makes Deshaun Watson a sympathetic figure. That's crazy. But I do think it's strange that these victims are going. I don't think the sweet part's weird. I just don't think that they're going to find closure going to this game. But hey, if they think they might, all the power in the world to them. Anyway, LeVar Arrington continues with this zag.
Why would you want to go and watch him play?
Maybe they feel like they're haunting him. They're haunting
from,
him.
From the sweet. You're coming to a sweet to watch me play. Have you been in a suite all year to watch the Houston Texans play?
I agree.
So what, you flaunting your money that you got now? Or are you like, we got you? Like, to me, that's how I'm looking at it. Like, so y'all got paid, you got your settlements, and now you're coming to sit in a suite. You didn't say we're coming to stand out front and watch Deshaun go in and shame him while he's walking into the stadium. The report says they got a suite, and they're going to watch the game from a suite. He's not even going to see them.
I like the zag from a, hey, sports radio's hard. You got to do 4-hour shows a day perspective.
I will say, so the first part, not a good start, but I guess that's the like old Skip Bayless. You start by saying something completely ridiculous. By the end of it, though, I kind of see what he's saying, where it's not a meaningful protest or anything to be up in a suite. Like, that's
it's not. It isn't, but I don't think that's what they're doing. And I want to pause for a second. He's focusing on the wrong thing here. You should be focusing on Tony Busby, who is a charlatan of a lawyer. Like, that's what this is about. I think Busby bought them the tickets. I honestly don't know. I doubt that any of these 10 would want to spend a dime of their money on watching Deshaun Watson play a football game, let alone going to NRG Stadium to watch the Houston Texans get absolutely ass-kicked by Deshaun Watson or by Nick Chubb or by, shoot, I guess Jadeveon Clowney might be on the field for that game. I haven't checked the injury report.
Does he get a tribute video?
He should get a tribute video. There's a lot of Clowney haters. I liked Clowney. I thought Clowney played well for the Texans. I thought he was one of the best run defenders in the league. He didn't do what you wanted out of the first overall pick, but I don't know. Didn't you like him more than Mario Williams? Honestly, I don't remember the Mario Williams era at all because when I moved here, he was injured. I think he had just gotten hurt against the Pittsburgh Steelers in 2011. And I came here and I never saw him play once. I suppose you pretty much got the same kind of performance out of both of them where they were like good but never great.
Yeah, Mario Williams was probably better. He was definitely better, actually. But Jadeveon Clowney, yeah, I guess I do like Jadeveon Clowney more than... Huh. I don't know how to square that. But yeah, Mario Williams was so much better than Jadeveon Clowney at pass rushing, at least.
I want to know what would have happened if the Texans didn't have the stupid pallet grass field, because Clowney got hurt in his first game against Washington. And I remember DJ Swearinger after the game was like, yeah, he stepped in one of the divots because we have a pallet grass system. Good God, Texans. And again, it's 2002. You're trying to do new things. Hey, we're going to have grass, but be indoors at the same time. But the Cardinal Stadium came out, I think, the next year, and they figured out how to roll a field in. And it's not like NRG Stadium's in the midst of an area where there's a lot of important real estate. For example, there is a genital wart-looking building to the right of it. If you go on, I think, Kirby Drive, from that angle, that has been overrun by cats and bats and rats and asbestos. It's called the Astrodome, and you could have gotten rid of that, but goddammit, everybody. Anyway, yeah, Sunday's going to suck. But I appreciate LeVar Arrington for giving me just a different way to look at this. Hey, is this going to be a Texans heavy show, Paul? God, I hate you. You can't get away from the flagship and do the same stuff that they do with the flagship. Fine. But I'm still thinking about this team. It is a football Friday, if you will. And there is something I am thinking about. After hearing a fired coach talk about his expectations with the team that he was just coaching, how long is a rebuild supposed to take in the NFL? It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN, or on twitch.tv/ESPN975, or Twitter at Gallant Says, at Sean A. Mapes, to respond. How long is it supposed to take? We'll talk about that next.
ESPN 97.5. Listening to the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Peter Schrager of the NFL Network, Good Morning Football, does a podcast where he interviews coaches and other figures across the NFL in the middle of the season, and he gets access to people that I definitely know I am not able to get. Am I bitter about it? I don't know. Anyway, Peter Schrager spoke with former Carolina Panthers head coach, now turned Nebraska head coach, very wealthy man, Matt Rhule, about his time in Carolina, and asked him if Rhule had any regrets.
Probably taking another job. You know, I mean, I mean, it's a great place, you know, the wonderful people, but I just don't know if I was a fit there. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we talked about, hey, we're going to have a 4-year plan, a 5-year plan. You know, if you tell me, hey, we got a 2-year plan, then I'm going to go get signed a bunch of free agents and do it. So, you know, what was a 4-year plan became a 2-year and 5-game plan real quick. And
interesting.
It's not about, hey, it's not, and I'm not angry about it. You know, no. At the end of the day, I understand, but if it's going to be that quick, then we're going to sign some more free agents. We're going to go make the blockbuster trade. We're going to do those things. I think the trajectory that we were on was correct. It was to have a team that next year could maybe make a big trade.
The first part, you hear excuses by Rhule. It wasn't a fit. No, you weren't good in the NFL. It's fine. A lot of coaches can't cut it in the NFL. I don't think that's an indictment on a guy who actually has been successful at the college level before. Nick Saban, of course, struggled in the NFL too. As he goes on, though, don't you hear a little bit of, maybe entitlement's the wrong word, but an expectation that he was going to get more time? And you shouldn't get that much time in the NFL these days. It really does vary owner to owner as far as how reactionary a team might be. You've seen the Pittsburgh Steelers be very, very calm, cool, and collected when it comes to head coaches in particular. Their last three coaches are what? Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, Mike Tomlin. I mean, that's incredible stability, especially considering the Steelers haven't been great every single one of those years. They've been good for the majority of that time. But is that because of the continuity? I don't know. I think that they might have actually just hit a home run with three straight hires. Or maybe it's a home run with Knoll and it's a double with Cowher and it's a single with a runner going from second to third with Tomlin. Or maybe it's vice versa. Honestly, Tomlin and Cowher are pretty comparable. But whatever the case, they both were successful NFL coaches. And then you take a look at the Cleveland Browns. I mean, can you even remember all of the coaches that they have had over the past decade? Freddie Kitchens, Rob Chudzinski, Hugh Jackson. And there are others who I'm forgetting. Many of whom I imagine were very boring sounding. Then you look at the Browns front office and what they've run through. There was a Sashi Brown in charge of things at one point. Wasn't there some guy that was from, maybe that was Sashi Brown, but from like the analytics world of baseball? Like, wasn't it one of the guys who was from Billy Beane's Moneyball system who came in? And now it's Andrew Berry. Cleveland has been very quick on the trigger. It hasn't worked out for them. But those two situations, don't think about them. Think about your own individual situation. If you don't see any progress out of your head coach, first off, over the course of his first season, you should have the stones to say that he's not the guy. I didn't have a problem with the Texans firing Culley after last season. He wasn't good, and he sounded like a dummy at press conferences, which doesn't inspire a lot of confidence with the fan base. I don't know what he was like when it comes to his relationships with players, but this thing would not necessarily be better if Culley was still here this year. Lovie Smith, better coach than Culley, mainly based off of experience. But how much better of a coach is he than Culley? That is definitely a question that if you really wanted to spend the time on it, and I personally don't, I think you would have a hard time proving that Lovie is definitively way better, at least post his coaching with an amazing Chicago Bears defense. He has not shown, Lovie Smith, any signs that this is getting better over the course of this year. And yeah, Culley and the Texans really, it was the last month of the year where they finally were able to hit the switch, I guess, and look somewhat competent and competitive in games. They beat the Chargers. They almost beat the Titans at the end of the year. But you're not seeing that from Lovie. I have no reason to expect that from Lovie, especially now with Kyle Allen under center. So I feel like they should be willing to move on as part of this rebuild after this year. With Caserio, that's where it gets tricky. So the first draft class, what was he supposed to do? And the cap situation that he was left by Bill O'Brien, what was he supposed to do? This year, you're finally seeing some of his first draft picks out there, and it hasn't been bad, but I don't think it's been special or great. You aren't feeling like that. And I think next year for Caserio, that's the year where I feel like if it's a bad one, he gone. It should be that. A rebuild should be something that takes place not overnight, but you have to see some signs of anything, just a pulse. And you don't have that in any facet of the organization right now. And I'm really curious as to how Cal McNair, a rather hands-off owner, is going to handle this. I don't feel great about it. I don't think anyone should feel great about it. And while I think that finally Cal is actually learning about some of the mistakes that the organization has made, especially when it comes to just fan outreach, that's not making up for the awful product that you're seeing on the field every single Sunday. But how long is a rebuild supposed to take? Matt Rhule, the way that he was talking about it, sorry, bro, it don't work like that. It doesn't take that long. It shouldn't take that long. You should be able to turn the page, not overnight, but rather quickly. I think 2 to 3 years is the limit for a regime. And if you're not seeing enough right away, bye. Get out. Don't be a, you know what? Have some balls and move on. It's very easy to tell if someone isn't the guy at quarterback. It's very easy to tell if somebody isn't the guy at head coach. You should be able to pull the trigger on those two very quickly.
And one thing that can help speed up a rebuild is nailing the quarterback position. And so I've already seen this take out there of, well, maybe the Texans, they don't draft Bryce number one, and then they try to get Caleb Williams number one next year. What do you think of that? Is that
– no.
Can Nick Caserio even afford to pick 2 years in a row?
They have – like right now they have to take Bryce Young. You're going to lose more fans if you don't have anything worth getting excited about next year. And the quarterback's the only thing that's going to make anyone care. That's it. And it might work out, it might not. Honestly, I don't know. I don't know. I like Bryce Young. I do, but he's small, and he's not going to be playing against SEC defenses. He's going to be playing against NFL defenses, and he's going to have to figure out how to be very careful with the way that he scrambles around. Kyler Murray has had this problem the first couple of years in the league, and Kyler Murray is more athletic than Bryce Young. Kyler Murray, I mean, we've seen him miss several games. Now, Bryce Young is a gamer, and Kyler Murray is a video gamer, so like there's a difference between those two, but You don't know. You don't know with Bryce Young. But they have to. They have to take Bryce Young this coming season. That shouldn't buy Caserio, though, any more time. And definitely shouldn't buy Lovie Smith any more time. We have some comments. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. How long do you think the Texans rebuild is going to take? The Texans are in perpetual rebuild, never ending until that D-bag sells the team. And that's somewhat unfair. These have been a disastrous last couple of years to the point where they have been, I think, the worst probably 2 to 3 years in the NFL. You had a franchise quarterback who wanted out of town before the whole sexual misconduct allegations things popped up. You know, like this has been a really bad stretch. But is it a perpetual rebuild? 2011, 2012, there were some people who thought that they were a Super Bowl contender. I never believed that. And from 2014 to 2019, this team wasn't a Super Bowl contender, but they were watchable and they were good. And watchable to good, that has been good enough for the Texans in the past, given that the first 10 years were so hard for them to actually win games, be plus 500. So let's not be completely unfair here. This is a perpetual rebuild. It feels like it will be a perpetual rebuild. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, and the fact that they have made no steps to being respectable in the last 3 years.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
They've just been awful. The last Deshaun year in 2020 when Bill O'Brien gets fired. Awful last year with Culley. Yeah. Probably the worst yet this year.
A couple Twitch comments, twitch.tv/ESPN975, and that's Sean Mapes behind the glass. Done right, a rebuild should take 3 to 4 years, max 5. I think you got to lean towards 3.
3 to be, like, in the playoff hunt.
Yeah.
I'm not even saying make the playoff. I'm just saying, like, go 7-9 or
exactly.
7-10.
Being the Astros bad for 4 years is unacceptable in the NFL. It is. It's too. There's too much parity in that league. So, like, the 4 to 5 stuff, no. Three. Three, the team has to be competitive. So that means next year the Texans have to be competitive, which is maybe unfair, but, like, I don't think it is. Like, next year, you're going to have to do quite the spin job on your situation and bring in guys who want to be here. And honestly, right now, that's an uphill battle with the way that Jerry Hughes and Brandon Cooks have been acting. You know, Hughes hasn't been unprofessional, at least, about it. What else do we have? Cypress Jeff. I think it was Florio who said it the other day. The Texans will never stand a chance at success as long as Cal is the owner. I've been saying the same thing for years now. I would say the same thing, but look at the Dolphins and Jets, who both have boobs for owners. I mean, they're both finally showing something this year. Is it going to sustain itself? I don't know, but I think that's wrong. Battery chucker, you can't build like baseball or basketball and have a roster that lasts 10 years. That's true, and that's why it worked for the Astros. And it's different in the NFL. We do have a couple of calls here. We're going to take them on the other side. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. How long is an NFL rebuild supposed to take? And also, in a very brief 10-minute drill, God, it's sad to be a Patriots fan. I'm not quite like a Texans fan right now, but it's not very fun. What's the latest with Antonio Brown? Also, some follow-up when it comes to, first off, Jerry Jones Photogate and Patrick Peterson versus Kyler Murray. All of that in this hour. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
The most interactive sports talk show in Houston, 713-780-3776. How long is a rebuild supposed to last in the NFL? I think year three, it's got to be complete. You got to be at least somewhat competitive. A contender, maybe that's going too far, but come on. You got to be in the playoff hunt. It's a 14-team playoff in 2022. Come on. It's probably going to get even bigger, honestly, over the years. Jason has a thought on rebuilds in the NFL. Jason, what's up?
Hey, what's up, Paul? Thanks for taking my call. So my thing about the rebuild, I think, well, I'm a couch GM, just like most of us, but I really think that we're overthinking it because, you know, when you make major changes like that, a lot of teams aren't good the following year. And we've been in existence for 20 years now. We've had a couple of playoff wins. we're just spoiled. I think the fact that Nick Caserio came from New England, and correct me if I'm wrong, he was a person who basically looked at the later players in the draft, so maybe like the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round. So maybe he's not used to picking in the early rounds like that because it wasn't his thing when he was in New England. But this is just me being a college GM. Jordan Love. I like Jordan Love.
You want Jordan Love?
Yeah, take him in free agency. Next year, he's a free agent next year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or trade for him. I think he's a free agent. But sign him in free agency, trade that first pick, maybe down, or pick Will Anderson, and then just go from there. Keep Lovey for two reasons. Because you don't want to get rid of another head coach the following year, and it looks bad on Nick Caserio's resume to have two coaches in just, you know, a couple of years of being a GM.
I get what you're saying with that last point, Jason, but I don't think you can be scared of making tough decisions because it'll make you look bad. You have to not care. And honestly, to go back to this past offseason, it would have been probably very strange if they hired Josh McCown, but could it have been any worse than what we have seen thus far, you know? Like, I think that it would just be different. And I'll let you finish your thought. I heard you in the background for a second. All I'm saying is they hired Lovie Smith, and it felt like it was a reactionary change to Lovie Smith at the last second. And what you're getting with Lovie Smith is kind of like the second half of Lovie Smith's career, which with the Bucks and with Illinois was not good after a great start, at least for most coaches, with the Chicago Bears.
True, but you have to think of the other coaches who do get a second chance, who have, you know, were in the league. They left because they sucked. They went other places. They did okay, and then they came back. And I mean, coaches are being recycled, right? It's a thing. We know that. Coaches are being recycled because of the coaching staff that they were with in previous years. They're like, oh, let me bring this person in because we're familiar with them, you know, because of what they did in the past. That's just how it works. What have you done? We base on, you know, your resume. What have you done? Okay, we'll take you in based upon what you've done as coaching. Right, but I think Josh McCown would have actually been a fresh start. I was for Josh McCown because he was a quarterback. I mean, most of the backup quarterbacks are into the playbook.
Yeah,
right?
You're right on that, Jason. I think going offense, and appreciate the phone call because we got other people that wanted to weigh in on the text line too. It's better to go with the offensive mind. I thought it was weird to hire a defensive mind too, especially when it's a defensive reach, right, who's up there in age. It doesn't reek of a long-term decision hiring Lovie Smith. It's like all right, well, this is better than what we had before.
Do you think Josh McCown could have tied the Colts in week one?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, okay.
It's not a good Colts team.
Just as good. It's almost impossible to be worse.
I mean, yeah. I mean, the Jaguars were so bad in that game that you played against them in Jacksonville, too. There are very few coaches that you can say definitively would have done a worse job with this. And that's not necessarily an indictment on Lovie Smith because of the roster. I think to what Jason was saying a little bit earlier, too, that this is that we're spoiled. I'm not going to go that far. You know, I'm not going to go that far. This organization has been middle of the road at best, and I think that the lack of relevance nationally has always been a big problem with this team. And it sucks to root for a team that, like, everyone's like, I'm flipping the channel on this one. But that's what they've always been. Like, when I wasn't living here, I didn't go out of my way to watch a Texans game. Not even to, like, watch fantasy stats with Andre Johnson or Matt Schaub. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. Twitch.tv/ESPN. 97.5. I'd take, says Battery Chucker, making the playoffs regularly and not making a Super Bowl than winning one or two games a year. Yes, me too. Everyone should take that. And this idea that tanking to get like the number one overall pick is good when you're in that like middle zone. No, that's stupid. What the Rockets did over the past decade, going from a team where Luis Scola was the best player to getting James Harden and everything going from there, even if I don't like James Harden, that is how all organizations should operate. This tanking stuff is BS. It is a middle finger to you and your intelligence, expecting you to stick around.
Making the playoffs 8 straight years is better than not.
It is.
I feel like that's a very controversial thing to say. No, I'd rather just make the play. I mean, the Rockets are almost a bad example because they were very good for like 3 of those years. Mm-hmm. But still, like, just making the playoffs is like better than this.
It is good. Yes. Yes. Like, I have high standards, too, and I've kind of become sports spoiled as a fan, growing up a Patriots fan. But I mean, I'm watching this last night, that Thursday night game, and I'm thinking to myself, damn, like, hey, at the very least, they're not a laughing stock. You know, like, at the very least, there were moments during the game where I'm like, oh, maybe they have a chance. Marcus Jones, what's
yeah,
up?
Yeah, call a couple more plays for Marcus Jones.
Call all the plays for Marcus Jones. Jesus, that guy's awesome. It's like two times in 3 weeks. Like he wins the game against the Jets with that punt return touchdown, and then they throw a screen to him. It's his first offensive snap ever. See why that guy won the Paul Hornung Award. Holy crap. Yeah, they got to use him on offense a lot more. That guy's electric. Woo, go Cougs. Cougar Paul here. Ed Oliver in that game last night, too. Whoa. Cougs, 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 Cougs. I like Cougars. I like Washington State, too. Cougars are my favorite thing. I don't know if that's the fight song, but I like Cougars. Those Cougars do. Anyway, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. We normally do our 10-minute drill at 10:30. There are a couple of, I think, very funny NFL stories to get to. So we will dive into that next. Our 10-minute drills, the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Set, hush.
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time. For me last night, my Bills fan friend Steve was texting me after the game was in hand, which I thought was a lack of confidence on his part in the Bills. I thought the Bills were going to kill the Patriots last night. Here is Josh Allen's. I don't know if this was the best play he did in the game, because there was another play earlier where it was third down and he's scrambling and then he just flips the pass to a running back to the right on third and eight, and the guy caught it and he goes for the first down. But this touchdown pass by Josh Allen, where he extends the play, he looks like he's going to be sacked, and he jumps, and he throws this touchdown. I mean, what do you bleeping do?
48 yards total on the drive. Can they make it pay off here? Allen running and throws, and it's caught by Gabe Davis in the end zone. He's hassled, and he's able to get it away.
Yeah, like I they had no chance against Josh Allen, the defense. I mean, they didn't stand a chance against Kirk Cousins and Stephon Diggs. Why was it going to be different against Josh Allen? Excuse me, Kirk Cousins and Justin Jefferson. Why was it going to be different against Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs? Mac Jones was caught in this game, a viral moment where he's shrieking at Mac Jones. Excuse me, at Matt Patricia. Sorry, my names are getting all butchered in this segment. Here is Mac Jones after the game being asked about his own Tom Brady moment.
Obviously, just kind of let my emotions get to me, but, you know, we're kind of playing from behind, and what I said was about throwing it deeper in the short game. You know, I got to execute that part better, but it's the short game that we kept going to, which was working, but I felt like we needed chunk plays, and, you know, I shouted that out to kind of get everyone going, and that's emotional, that's football. I'm passionate about this game, and obviously, you don't want to get okay. your emotions
blah,
up.
Blah, blah,
you
blah, get the blah, best blah, of you, but, blah, 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 blah. Mac, you should have said what we're all thinking. Like, my offensive coordinator, who claims that he's the reason that Malcolm Butler got that Super Bowl-winning interception, he, in the past, has been on the sidelines holding a laminated play card with a pencil in his ear. He dresses like a slob. Forget his actual coaching acumen. That guy is disgusting. You've seen young Mac Jones looking all Draco Malfoy in some of those photos. I saw Dan Orlovsky say, yeah, Mac should request a trade this offseason. Honestly, I think about it. I don't know how much he would actually fetch in a trade. He did play two pretty good games, I thought, in a row. And specifically, I would say the Vikings game. I thought he played well. I thought he played well against the Jets, too. But yeah, it's not Mac Jones' fault in New England. I don't think he's the guy, but he's got no chance to succeed with the guy calling plays there.
I think there's a chance because the college football coaching carousel is kind of coming to an end, and Bill O'Brien's been
shut up.
Maybe offensive coordinator
no.
Bill O'Brien?
No,
Does that make you not?
I didn't like O'Brien as an offensive coordinator with the Patriots. I liked what he did at Penn State, which is why I changed my tune slightly on him. But I didn't like him as offensive coordinator in New England. I didn't. Oh, God. I mean, all I got, there's this piece in The Athletic that said that Tom Brady might join the Patriots after this season. Like, that's what I got.
They and also mentioned, like, two other teams.
They did, yes. And, like, the Titans are a much more likely, I think, destination than the Patriots. Yeah. Hey! Does this count as an NFL story still? Antonio Brown, anything? So, this story, I don't know if there's been a follow-up to it. But there's an arrest order for him for a misdemeanor. He's in his house, and he won't come out. So it's sort of like that episode where Tom Cruise locks himself in the closet of South Park. Antonio Brown has locked himself in his home, and police have knocked on the door several times. But since it's a misdemeanor, they're not going to break down the door. So Brown's just trapped in his house. What do you think he does when he's by himself? And it's for alleged. I think it's domestic violence, something along those lines. He got into a dispute with a woman. I guess the dispute got physical. Anyway, what does Antonio Brown do in his house when he's by himself? Do you think he spits bars? Do you think that he's come up with another song? Sean, I know there's one song that we've played before by Antonio Brown that you like. This is my favorite Antonio Brown banger. Stop done. The song continues with actual bars after that. It does seem like he's projecting. I don't think he has a whole lot of money anymore. But I'm guessing that's what Antonio Brown's doing. He's in the lab. People have paid him money to perform publicly.
Like festivals. Like real festivals.
Yeah. And also like the occasional, it's 5 o'clock in a mall. Here's something.
Would you go? Oh, okay. No, you probably wouldn't like leave your house just to go. But if you're at the mall and you're, you know, walking past PacSun or whatever, and then you walk over to the food court and they have the stage set up, and it's I got a whole lot of money.
I'm dancing to that. Yeah, it's a good song. Bars, bro.
Pick up some Panda Express and vibe out.
Usually a Chick-fil-A guy, though, when I go to the food court. I can't get... Chick-fil-A, it's too good, man. Whenever I see Chick-fil-A, I'm going to get the spicy chicken sandwich with the sweet tea. It's a perfect combination. Sweet tea with fried chicken sandwiches. Oh, wonderful. What was the song by Antonio Brown that you liked, Sean Mapes?
Pit Not the Palace.
Okay.
He's from the Pit Not the Palace. He's kind of stylish.
It's true.
Palace and stylish. Never thought those would rhyme.
Well, he made it rhyme. Yesterday, we played a clip of Patrick Peterson on a podcast with Bryant McFadden saying that Kyler Murray's all about himself. Kyler Murray got upset about it online and tweeted at him saying, I thought you were my big bro. Well, Patrick Peterson was asked about that at his media availability with the Vikings yesterday. And I gotta say, this is as awesome a job of doubling down on what you said, but like in a very cool, calm, and collected manner as you're ever gonna get. Here's Patrick Peterson on his ex teammate.
First of all, I don't have any beef with Kyler Murray because they was like, oh, Patrick blatantly disrespected Kyler. I didn't do that. You know, what I meant by my comment was when you're a franchise quarterback, you have to carry yourself a certain way. So if you're having bad body language, pouting, moping on the sideline, what type of energy do you think that feeds off to your teammates? That's what I meant about Kyler cares. He's caring about himself because he's not putting the team first. You know, when you make a bad throw, you're coming off to the sideline, you're dropping your shoulders. How you think the defense feel? If our starting quarterback don't have any energy, no fire that we can win this game, how can we? So that's what I meant about Kyler caring about Kyler. I didn't mean that in no disrespect, any fashion or form. And I might not be his mentor, but these are the things, tips that I think that it can help him be, you know, a better football player in the long run. You know, so it is what it is at the end of the day.
Great points. He kept on going. And Sean, I don't know if we have the second part of this. Okay, we do. Cool. Look, everything he said there is fair. Murray looked so dissociated from his team throughout a game. Why would you want to play for a guy like that? Quarterback is a tough position, no doubt about it. And the guys who play it that are great generally inspire those around them in some way, shape, or form. Even if they are a piece of, you know what, off the field, say like a Ben Roethlisberger or something like that, they still are able to inspire their teammates around them. That's why these folks on the Cleveland Browns are excited about Deshaun Watson being back on Sunday. Because whatever he does off, hey, I mean, Watson is a damn good quarterback on his best day. There's no denying that. Murray can be that, but when things go poorly, it's everybody else's fault. I want to go play video games. He doesn't handle failure well. And Peterson continued to go off on Kyler Murray, who he said, look, I've reached out and I texted him, no response. More Patrick Peterson on Murray.
He mentioned that you have his number. Do you have any intent to call him?
I don't have his number. I did reach out. I did get his number from an ex-teammate. I texted him.
Okay.
He didn't reply to the text. I don't know if that's his number or whatever the case may be. But, you know, but I do look forward to talking to him, you know, because I see a ton of talent in him. And that those mannerisms, you know, are alarming. And I'm just saying something that most people may be afraid to tell him.
Sure. Mm.
That's just it's no secret. Everybody sees it. Mm. You know, you see it every time they're on television. You see Kyler Murray pouting, cursing out the head coach, calling out the offensive scheme. I didn't say that. He did.
I thought it was a fantastic way to stand up for what you said on your podcast. And honestly, now I want to listen to his podcast and have him on as a guest. Patrick Peterson, top of the list, Sean Mapes, for the offseason. We got to get Patrick Peterson on. It's fantastic. What else do we have around the NFL? Well, there's been a lot of controversy about a picture of Jerry Jones from 65 years ago outside a high school in Little Rock, Arkansas, where it appears that two black boys trying to enter the school are being blocked by a bunch of jeering high school-aged kids. We have no context for the photo other than certainly an interesting image. We don't know who is saying what. We don't know why every single person in that picture is there. And again, it took place 65 years ago. I imagine that a great deal of the people that are in that picture could not even be with us anymore. But it's become a big deal. Last week in particular, that's when it first came up. And LeBron James, we'll play the audio of it later on, made it a big deal too. Dak Prescott was someone who I think it's actually fair to ask about that Jerry Jones photo. Here is what Dak had to say.
Yeah, I don't know if I've fully processed it all the way, honestly. I think whether LeBron's talking about the picture, I mean, I think that's on Jerry to address, right? I mean, in the same sense, it's 65 years ago. And how times have changed. I mean, look the man's resume since then, right? And as I said, I give grace. And I think that's a conversation and a question not only for him, but for you guys and how y'all feel, how accountable y'all have been and covering and discussing the disparities and differences in race. Yeah, I'm just, as I said, I'm here for growth and giving grace and trying to make this world a better place.
Walks the line there, but he's right in that this took place 65 years ago. What are we supposed to be doing about this picture of Jerry Jones where there's not a lot of context? Best case scenario, I guess he's in the wrong place at the wrong time, but again, it took place 65 years ago. Has Jerry Jones been proven to be racist? I suppose some people might say that because of his original take on kneeling for the national anthem. But a couple of years later, he did it in solidarity with his players. that seemed like some sort of growth. Maybe not a lot of growth, but some sort of growth. I can understand why an NFL owner might be a little paranoid about people stopping watching the game given all the hullabaloo that was created by the Colin Kaepernick and the rest of the NFL kneeling. Personally, I've said this before, I thought Kaepernick for 18 minutes actually sounded like a very intelligent individual talking about our personal liberties and that we do have the right to protest, and that a veteran had told him this is a good way to protest. So he did it in that way. But to go back to that moment in time, I can understand why an owner would be terrified of the bottom line and terrified of erosion of support for the NFL. Did sound like for a while people were never going to watch the game again. I think they were a little bit talking out of their ass on that one. Maybe some people actually have, and yet you still listen to this. We do talk a lot of NFL on sports radio, so I don't know how you could really get away from any of it. But I think that this has been a story that's like it's interesting. Hey, wow, he was at that moment in time. He's acknowledged it before, I guess. I'm sure he's not thrilled that he's in the picture, and I'm sure that he has changed his mindset on a lot of things over the course of his life. A lot of us are idiots when we're in high school. To me, this is equivalent to, hey, like seeing something on Twitter that someone posted in high school and saying, hey, that was bad. But it's different in that, again, we don't know why Jones was there. We don't know what he said. People like to get mad about things today. This is an easy subject to get mad about. A rich billionaire who, when he was young, was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Again, best case scenario. Maybe he was saying bad things there. Maybe he didn't want those two boys or those other high school age black kids to go to high school. I really do not know. Whatever the case, I feel like we're making a big deal out of this, and I feel like we need to have more information available to really be going after it. But information is not something that we really need these days for getting angry, is it? 713-780-3776 to call, to text into, tweet me at Gallant Says, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Is Justin Verlander gone? Starting to sound that way. You'll hear why next.
ESPN 97.5.